Well, the scoreboard said I lost today, but what the scoreboard doesn't say is what it is I have found.
Studios for July 15th, 2019. I'm Nima Naderi alongside Parsa Sammy, and we're here to review the Wimbledon Championships. Let's introduce our co-host for today. Parsa, how are you, my friend?
I'm doing great. Can you believe the drama over in London? What an ending, right?
You know what, Parsa? I think everything is meant to be. And we'll get into both the women's and men's fields, but obviously yesterday it was the closest final to right now, which was the men's final. I thought the men's tournament overall was very boring. There was three good matches, in my opinion. You had the Nadal-Kyrgios second round. You had Federer-Nadal in the semis. And then, obviously, yesterday with Djokovic and Federer. So, I mean, they saved the best for last. And that will be the lasting memory of the championships, especially on the men's side. We'll get into the women's in a second. But definitely a lot of drama, a lot of results. I think, especially for the women's, I mean, I don't think I know too many people that would have taken Simona Halep to tune Serena Williams 2-2 in the finals on Saturday. If they did, and they can prove that to me, I'm gonna definitely go over there, fly down even, and shake their hands.
Nice.
Because I really don't think that anybody did that. But so let's start with the women's, and then we'll get into the Djokovic Fed final. So we had Simona Halep capturing her second career Grand Slam. She's a player who's finished now number one 2 years in a row. She won the French Open last year, and now she's a Wimbledon champion. She played amazing tennis, three unforced errors, no problem. I mean, she was just running around like a rabbit, you know, getting everything, and Serena was trying to smash the ball, serve big, spin serves. Whatever she did, Halep was on top of everything. And it's a very interesting dynamic for me because, you know, Serena now, Parsa, has played three Grand Slam finals since she's returned after becoming a mother. In all of those finals, obviously credit to her immensely, but she's got destroyed in all of them. Still seemed pretty positive, and she's ready to go. She definitely wants to, you know, get to Margaret Court's record of 24 and then hopefully break that, get to 25. But it remains to be seen if that's going to happen. She's going to be 38 at the end of next month, just like Federer. So I don't know, you know, how much of this you're able to really diagnose because, again, nobody, I think, would have really taken Halep, especially with that score line. But it is what we have. So what did you see, and how do you think, and why did this unfold the way that it did?
Yeah, I mean, I think ultimately that it what we saw was an improved Serena in terms of fitness and body shape. I think she's building back towards her championship form. If you noticed, her first-step explosiveness is looking a bit better. What we saw in the final was just she was just really tentative. She couldn't figure out, because Halep was moving so well and was so locked in, she couldn't figure out how aggressive to be versus how much spin to put on the ball and keep balls in play. And so she ended up doing a bit of everything and spraying a ton of balls all over the place. And a lot of credit to Halep in that when I feel like Serena did get the up end in certain rallies, Halep came up with some tremendous shots to keep her down. I don't think that Halep will be able to do that come 2 or 3 months' time. I'm not even sure about New York yet, but I'm looking for a big year from Serena next year. In New York, she might be able to get there. I think there will be other players that are going to be in the mix there. Serena will definitely be there as well, but I feel like she needs a little bit more fine-tuning in order to get there, but I think she's as close as she's ever been. All credit to Halep. Halep was very composed. This is a new, last 3 years has been a new version of Halep, and although a lot of people had sort of, I don't want to say written her off, they thought she was done because she wasn't at the top of the rankings anymore, she proved that she's a bona fide champion and that she's going to be there in the end when it counts. And she played a tremendous match. She utilized her strengths to the best of her ability. Her movement was tremendous. Her counterpunching was unbelievable. And she took advantage of what she knew tactically in order to upend Serena. And Serena wasn't able to be comfortable in that match. And that's ultimately what ended up happening. You had a player on one end who knew exactly what she was doing, was not pressured by the moment, was not, you know, anything other than that. And Serena, who was hesitating and had a tough time making these decisions, you know, I think that's what it ended up being. So credit to Halep. I think she was the better player and the best player of the tournament. That's why she holds the cup, the championship trophy. And, you know, she's going to be a favorite even going into New York. Not the favorite, but one of the favorites going into New York.
You know, as much as I was watching Halep play and, I mean, saying, well, this is an amazing effort, you know, I thought about this, you know, young Canadian girl that we have in Bianca Andreescu. You know, very similar game. I think an even stronger, like, she's even stronger physically. And I think that if Halep can get to this, you know, point in her career where now she's a two-time Grand Slam champion, you know, she said that her next goal is to win an Olympic medal next year in Tokyo, which obviously she's going to have a great chance of doing, at least grab one. And she's finished number one 2 years in a row. There's no reason why Andreescu can't do the same. So I think you're going to watch out for her. I don't know if she's recovered fully from her shoulder injury. I know she wants to get back and play here in Toronto in a couple weeks. I think Serena has also entered in that event, so that should be good. And as we move forward now to the hard courts, which is going to be our focus pretty much for the rest of this season until, you know, the end of Miami next year, I think you got to look at Amanda Anisimova. I think she's going to do some good stuff. Very good player. I think Serena is definitely going to be in the mix. Barty Party. You know, she played well. She took her loss graciously to Alison Risk there. But I think overall it's going to be good. Looking forward to the Rogers Cup in a couple weeks here. Men will be firing it up in Montreal. Fed said that he won't be playing that one, so that's a bit of a blow for that tournament. But it's definitely to be expected, especially after he played in the French Open. Is there anything else you can see that, you know, fans can look forward to as they look forward to the hard courts of North America in terms of the women's side that that we should be following before we jump into the men's recap?
Yeah, I mean, I think what's exciting about the women's side is that there's a star, you know, 6, 7, 8 of them forming that is making it exciting. You now know that there's, I don't know, maybe there's 8 potential players that can win the U.S. Open. And so you want to see how they progress through the summer hard court season and see who can finish on top. Last year it was Osaka who just brought out the fire all over the place. And it could be her again. It could be her getting the good vibes and getting back into form. It could be Halep, you know, announcing her dominance. It could be Serena matching Margaret Court. It could be, there's a lot of storylines on the women. There could be Andreescu, a new winner. So you've got a whole slew of things, which I think then brings us to the men, Nima, because ultimately, what do we have on the men's side, Nima? I mean, do we have new? I don't know.
Okay, so we got a bunch of things that we're going to break down here. Obviously, I mentioned that I thought the overall men's tournament was very boring, except for those 3 matches. All including the big 3, basically, and Kyrgios, who's obviously, I think, another one of the exciting guys out there, even though the guy is a head case supreme at the moment, and I don't know what he's up to, but I think he's in the Bahamas still chilling out. And then we're going to talk about how the next gen has been very disappointing in the biggest stages, especially the last couple events. And then how good really are the big 3? I mean, and is it... can we see other players ever even getting to this level of play? And then we're going to preview the hard court season. So let's get into the match quickly, Parso, from yesterday. We had Fed and Djokovic playing in an amazing drama-filled match. I don't think it was maybe the best match ever Djokovic has played in terms of his actual shot-making. I thought Fed played actually very well, except for the 3 tiebreakers, which he lost all 3. He won one set 6-1 and he won one set 6-4. And he lost 3 sets in tiebreakers. One of them obviously at 12-all in the 5th set, which is incredible. Nevertheless, I mean, it was just, to me, it was like, you know, Parsa, very important stat. Federer basically, you know, did better than Djokovic in every category, except he had more unforced errors, especially when it counted. If you look at the tiebreakers, 11 unforced errors for Federer, 0 for Djokovic. And in those tiebreakers, Federer's best shot, which is arguably his forehand, let him down the most. And you talked about it, like, he's just getting a bit, you know, apprehensive. Like, I remember vividly in the first set where he was really using, you know, that out wide slice pattern and then hitting that inside out forehand. And he was doing that so well. He did that so well throughout the whole match. But in that first set breaker, he hits that out wide and then he's trying to hit this short angle cross court forehand. And then he hit it too early and he kind of mishit it and it went wide by like a couple feet or like a foot. And then it's like on match point. He's got that championship point, and he comes in on Djokovic's forehand, and the guy just hits that short angle cross court winner, and it's like, is this back at the U.S. Open where he's firing that return winner and he's saving match points against me? And it's just like, wow, and it's incredible. I mean, this guy's almost 38. He's got 2 championship points against Djokovic, and at 8-7, and he's not able to close it out.
Oh, Nima, I felt really bad. Although you know, what's funny is that if you remember that 40-15 first serve that he hit on championship point, that was an ace. He was going to hit his third ace in a row. That clipped the top of the tape, went up in the air, and then came back onto his side. You remember that?
Yeah. And it's amazing to me, like, this is why this stuff is so difficult. You know what I'm saying? Because you look at Serena, and she's such a decorated champion with 23 majors, but she's got destroyed in the last 3 finals. You look at Federer, clawing, playing the clay court season, had a very good clay court season, makes the semifinals of the hardest physical Grand Slam that we have on tour, loses to the eventual champion, now comes into Wimbledon, he wins Halle, comes into playing a lot of tennis, and he said he feels good, which is amazing. You know, he comes in, he plays Djokovic, who has now won 4 of the last 5 Grand Slams, has 2 championship points against him, almost 38, can't close it out, now what? You know what I mean? And it's just, and this is a guy who's won 20 Grand Slams. And this just, in some ways, we take it for granted. You know, those years where Federer was just cruising, winning 3 Grand Slams a year, just losing the French to Nadal, but just, you know, racking up 10, 12 titles every year. And he can't do it right now. And it remains to be seen if he ever will. I definitely don't put him as the favorite in New York. And Australia has a decent chance. French, definitely not. And then we go back to next year's Wimbledon. It's also an Olympic year. You know, he's going to have a lot of pressure there, especially from Uniqlo and all of the stuff that's surrounding him. But I think for me, Parsa, before we get your thoughts on this, for me, the most impressive things about Federer are his passion and dedication to the game. That goes without saying. But even with that, I can't, if I was in his position, man, I really don't know if I could handle what he has to handle. All of the press commitments, the sponsor commitments, traveling around, 4 kids. I already got almost $1 billion in the bank. I got, you know what I'm saying? And it's like, but he does it because he loves it. And that is just, it's amazing. I mean, that in its own right is a book to write. You know what I mean? Because just the passion, like Tom Brady. I mean, these guys just keep coming back for more and more, and they're ageless, and they're just playing at the top notch level, and so very close to winning. And obviously, because tennis is an individual sport, it becomes very difficult. So, I mean, my credit to Federer. Really feel bad for him, because I honestly, I'm not saying I was going for anybody per se, but I really felt that, you know, because of his age, it would have been nice if he won this title. Djokovic still only 32, and he's going to be the favorite definitely for the next couple years to win at least 6 of the next 8 majors. So, I mean, you know, you really would have liked to have seen Federer win this just because, you know, of everything that he's putting into trying to get these titles. So what are your thoughts?
Yeah, ageless is an interesting term. I find it more like hanging on and with desperation to prove that they can continue to hang on, whether it's Tom Brady or Roger Federer in this case. You know, what I found really interesting about the final was I'm not sure Federer could play any better than he did. We can sit here and critique, you know, different shot selections and things like that, but that shows that fine line he has to play with in order to be successful at this age. If you look at the one important stat, he actually ran more meters than Djokovic did, which was a testament to Djokovic moving him around the court constantly. At the same time, Federer is so reliant on his serve, and I was trying to explain this to a few people who continually text me that that's unbelievable, but I really wanted Federer to win, blah blah blah. And I said, well, look at the stats. It tells you a little bit of the storyline, except that the guy who had all the better stats didn't win. In that, most of the difference, the biggest difference in the statistics was the category of the aces. And when you're
a lot of aces.
When you're in service holds, a service game, you have to win 4 points out of, you know, whatever it is. Let's say 7, because that would be a 40-30 type of deal, or, you know, out of 6, whatever it is. You can get a cheap point, get another cheap point on your serve, and then you go 50-50 on 4 rallies that you have. And meaning, like, you win 2 out of the 4, you have a couple 2 cheap service winners, and you move on and you hold the serve. That basically happened over and over and over again. You get to the tie break, and now if you go and you start splitting your 2 points, which is basically what happened, it becomes very challenging for him to hold his 2 points dominantly. So if he had an ace and then he now gets into the rally and Djokovic wins that rally, it's now 1-1 instead of 2-0, whatever it is. And you start to create that separation as Djokovic is younger and has a more defensive, more counterpunchy type game while still being able to hold his serve regularly. It sort of showed the little bit of a difference in each of those tiebreaks. So it's interesting that the format of a tiebreak in this particular matchup did not favor Federer, where I think he normally would be the favorite in a tiebreak because of his serve. But because of Djokovic's ability to return, I think it really neutralized that, and actually not think, I know, it neutralized it, and it gave him the advantage, and therefore he won 3 tiebreak sets and won the championship because of it. Although he was probably outplayed for the entirety of the match, except for those tiebreaks, and that's ultimately what happened there. And, you know, in terms of guys catching up to Federer, and, you know, there's no one behind him. If Federer wasn't there, Djokovic and Nadal would be just cleaning house right now. The next gen guys aren't there. They don't have the ability. And I got texted that question quite a bit too yesterday.
Oh my god! So did I.
You know, what's going on? Where are these younger guys? Like what? You know, and it's kind of simple to me. These guys have been on this massive stage for a very long time. It's the ability to suffer that is by a mile, these guys' ability to suffer through the ups and downs. I mean, I don't know how many people were out there watching, but I was. I was going up and down. My son was crying every time. My son wanted Djokovic to win, by the way, everyone. But my son was crying every time Federer won, and then he was going, come on, every time Djokovic won. This is point by point. You know, the emotional ups and downs that a spectator, a 5-year-old is watching and going through was incredible. But then what about the guys out there? They're just do-do-do-do-do-do-do, you know, and just plodding along. Oh, I made an error. Okay, go to the next one. Ace. Okay, 15-all, you know, and they just continue to move on. This is where the young guys, they at some point get a little too anxious, get a little too impatient. They really want it bad. They make one mistake, and it's a break of serve in the fifth, and they'll lose 6-4 to Djokovic in the fifth. And they just can't get over it in the best of 5 format. In a best of 3 format, I think this is where you would start to see a little bit more fluky type things happening. But in the best of 5, I think you truly get the champion. As in, let's say the playoffs in the NBA, when you had the best of 5 series, you didn't feel like you necessarily had the best team going through. But in the best of 7, you kind of really figure it out. And I think in the best of 5 format in the Grand Slams, you kind of figure it out. But I think you have to have maturity mentally, physically, and emotionally in order to upend. And these guys are at the peak, and no one can figure out how to beat them because, one, they have to physically catch up. 2, they have to mentally catch up. And 3, and most importantly, emotionally, they have to be on the same level. And that's what we're finding with the young guys. They're not there yet.
And I think another thing, too, is that, you know, we've grown up now in the last 10 years of this social media era. And you didn't have that, you know, in 95, in 2005 even. And, you know, Fed just got onto Instagram a couple of years ago, and Nadal, I'm sure he doesn't even do anything. It's like he has like a guy who's doing it, Djokovic is a little bit more into it. But even all of these guys, they're in a different place. I mean, two of the three are dads. You know, Nadal is engaged, all in their early to late 30s. Different, like, than a Taylor Fritz and an Opelka and a Kyrgios and all of these guys who are really immersed in the, you know, the hip-hop genre and the streetwear stuff, and they're, you know, trying to be cool and all of this, whatever it is, and it's, they have kind of different priorities. I mean, Tsitsipas is doing, like, YouTube videos, and they're just different, you know what I mean? They're young, right? So they're going on with the times, and I think that also adds a lot of pressure, you know? I don't think Federer comes off court and he's checking how much his Instagram is blowing up. But I can guarantee you that Kyrgios is. I can guarantee you that Anisimova is. I can guarantee you that, you know, some of the younger, like Tsitsipas probably is. I mean, these guys, like, so Zverev. And that's the whole thing, right? They live, the pressures are also different because of their age, right? So they're trying to deal with everything that's in front of them. And they're not able to do it adequately. But, you know, I pose a question to you. Can we see, you know, Dimitrov playing the type of tennis that we saw yesterday? No. Can I see Raonic doing that? No. Can I see Nishikori doing that? No. Can I see Tsitsipas doing it? Maybe in the future. Can I see Zverev doing it? You said he needs a kind of an X's and O type guy, kind of like a Brad Gilbert off air. Maybe. Can I see Felix doing it? As of now, and I don't care that he's Canadian and I am too, yes, I can. As of now, because he's still only 18. Can I see Shapovalov doing it in patches? Because he's very erratic and he's slumping a bit right now, but he's got some work to do. Other than that, I mean, it's tough, right? Like, these guys, like, when, at what point do we just close the book and say, listen, you know what? These guys, Nadal won the French Open in 2005. Sorry. And then and Federer won the Wimbledon in 2003, and it's 2019, and the guy's still in Grand Slam finals and the talk of the tennis world. How many you know, posts have we seen on social media with Nadal, Federer, and Djokovic, like 85-year-olds still making the finals, 2050 finalists, semis, all this stuff. I have casual fans, just sports fans generally, throughout the week. What's going on here, man? Is there nobody else? Like, why are these guys always winning these tournaments, right? And it's like, I don't know. But then you made a good point. Like, if they're not in the finals, are we still getting the same traction? But it starts from somewhere, Parsa. You know, like, if Zverev wins Wimbledon, he wins U.S. Open, and he's in the finals of Australia, then people are going to start taking notice. They're like, okay, who is this guy? Osaka is already getting some good press. You know what I mean? Because of her background, because of the marketing that they're doing behind her, all of her endorsements. Stuff happens, right? You got to start from somewhere. So obviously, yes, Djokovic, Nadal, Federer, even Murray to some extent, household names. But these guys have just been cleaning up. You know, Parsa, I did some statistics. These guys have won, I think, 55 majors now in the last, whatever, 15 years. They've won, like, it's just been them. They've won the last 11 majors, back to back to back to back to back to whatever, and they've won 14 and a half years of Grand Slams, if you put all of their Grand Slams together. In the mix of that, who else has there been? Murray's got three, Wawrinka's got three, Del Potro's got one, Cilic has one. And that's it. Since this has begun, if you exclude those three guys, it's been Wawrinka 3, Murray 3, that's 6, Del Potro and Cilic, 8 Grand Slams since the beginning of this era of these three guys. That's 2 years of Grand Slams. And we're in 3 Slams of 2019 are gone. We have one left until we go to 2020. And right now, can you and I predict a guy winning the U.S. Open other than Djokovic, Nadal, or Federer? Definitely, I wouldn't put my money on any of those guys. I think Djokovic is a resounding favorite to win. Followed, I don't even think, at this point, Nadal and Federer, I think, are a distant second favorite. I would be honest, even though they're playing really well. Nadal just won the French. Federer's playing really well. You know, those guys got to be in the second category. And then you got guys maybe like I don't know, Tsitsipas, Zverev, and maybe even Felix if he pulls a rabbit out of the hat at this stage in his career. What else? Maybe Wawrinka. He's looking fit. He's looking motivated. Other than that, I mean, I don't know what else can happen, right? So it is what it is. And I don't know how good that is for tennis. I don't know how bad that is for tennis. I definitely know that I appreciated what I saw yesterday and on Saturday. And it is what it is. So
I think Nima, what we saw is that, you know, it was a lot of casual sports fans watching that final. So I think although you may get a boring beginning 10 days of the tournament, which, you know, for me, who's a tennis fan, I didn't find it boring, Nima. I mean, maybe there was a lack of exciting matches or whatever it was. But I enjoy watching tennis, period. What yesterday's final brought, though, was all sports fans, the whole world was tuned in and watching, and they all enjoyed it. And I think tennis needs a combination of all of it. We need the tennis fanatics like ourselves, and then we also need the casual fan who's, you know, who just loves drama and sports. I mean, you know, and entertainment. I mean, you know, this is an unscripted Broadway show that's televised across the entire globe. And everyone is watching it at the same time and watching it unfold at the same time with characters that are from all different walks of life and different countries. And I sat there yesterday and was watching the replay with my dad. And I said, I turned to my dad, I go, this is an incredible sport. And he just turned to me and he said, you know, I love it. I love tennis. It's amazing. And my dad's, you know, as much as I'm into the tennis, yeah, I didn't grow up with in a tennis household or anything like that. My parents were dropping me off on the courts and they're like, all right, see you later. And that's what it all was. So this was always my passion and no one else's. And so my dad, you know, just in recent time has now been getting into it more. It's just a, you know, and I heard it over and over. I went to the gym this morning and a trainer stopped me and he was like, I don't even know what's going on. I don't even know how to keep score, but that was amazing. That was unbelievable to watch. It was so much tension. I just couldn't even take my eyes off of the TV screen. I had to cancel appointments to keep watching. You know, this is very healthy for the sport to have these kinds of reactions. And I'm sure it was happening all across the world. And, you know, I love it. At the same time, I would love, you know, some maybe one guy to pop in there, two guys to pop in there. It took some time on the women's side. It's happening on the women's side where you're getting some parity. But at the same time, you're getting Serena trying to hold them back and trying to get the old school still winning the championships. Hey, maybe that's the next chapter for the men. But who's it going to be? That's the age-old question. Would love to hear from the people out there who they think it's going to be. You heard our take, and let's see what's going on.
Okay, Parsa, so our last two quick points here. Who do you like for the hardcore season coming up? What do you think is going to transpire basically in Montreal, Cincy, and then the U.S. Open? Is Djokovic going to clean house? Or because he hasn't really – I think he won Cincy last year, right, to complete his collection. But like, if you look at his Indian Wells and Miami results, even his Masters 1000, he hasn't been at that, you know, at the highest level that he could have been. But then he picks it up when he needs to, and I fully expect him to do that in New York. But how does that bode? You know, can we see like Zverev winning one of these two in the summer? Can we see Tsitsipas winning one of the two?
I think it's possible, but I also look at like a Riley Opelka as somebody who can start to put things together on the American hard courts.
I like his game.
Yeah, sure. I mean he's got a good game. He understands the sport. He moves unbelievably well for someone so big. You know, so there are some instances where I think there's opportunities. I think Djokovic obviously is the favorite. To make a run and to be the king of the hard courts, the king of the summer. But there are dangerous guys. We know a top level Wawrinka can take a guy like Djokovic out. You take Djokovic out, and then it opens doors for Federer, for Nadal, for Wawrinka himself. You know, I don't think Cilic is in that form anymore. But no. You know, these kinds of guys can all sort of poke through. But you need somebody to take Djokovic out, and that's not going to be very easy.
No, not at all. And our last point, We got to talk about a 15-year-old who captivated an audience throughout the fortnight, made the fourth round, lost to Halep in convincing fashion, but nevertheless beat Venus, her idol, and whatnot. And it's Coco Gauff, Corey Gauff, whatever you know you want to use. Both names are nice, and they're both fitting. But I think that, what do you think of her game? I mean, at 15, is she destined to be the next great legendary American women's champion? Or is it just like, I'll tell you what I think first. I mean, I like her backhand. I like her maturity. I like her tenacity. I think her serve could be a little bit better. I think the ball toss a bit too high. I think her forehand needs a little bit of work. Can get spinny a little bit too much. But she also has a lot of easy power like a Sloane Stephens. And the ball is just flying off of her racket, right? So do you see this player, based on what you saw, as somebody who can win multiple Grand Slams? And they're going to obviously have to monitor her a while because she's only 15, right? You don't want to burn her out. But what do you see in her future as Coco Gauff moves forward?
She definitely has championship pedigree. There's no doubt about it. She's got the demeanor to be a champion. My hesitation, and everyone can write it down and mark my words on it, and I know I'm right, as I deal with junior development quite a bit, she's 15. So she's going to continue to grow. And the problem with growth is that it affects mobility. And what she was able to do, and so that changes the way you play. And right now, she was able to sort of play a manipulating style of tennis to use her backhand to her advantage. You know, yes, things need work, but, you know, I think she's going to just continue to get better. Seeing her when she was 13 versus 15, she's a different player. So I'm sure at 17, she's going to be a different player, whether it's going to be a taller, lankier, slower, bigger forehand, you know, more aggressive serve. You know, I don't know how her game is going to adapt and change. My only fear is that, you know, let's enjoy what she is, which is she's got a championship brain. That's for sure. The rest of it remains to be seen. You know, we have to see when until she's about 20, we're really not going to know how she's really going to mold out as a player, you know, where she can be. The path is for me, unclear, other than, you know, you've got a hardworking kid who is willing to do what it takes in order to be great. And, you know, with that, the future is bright. And right now her stock is very, very high. But we have to see how she grows out. She's got all the makings of a champion. But I don't like to put the cart before the horse here. She's still, you know, 15. She did lose to the eventual champion. She came off the tournament saying, I want to win this thing. I'm disappointed. She's going to try to win the U.S. Open. That's her mindset. It's going to be exciting. And I think the U.S. crowd is going to definitely get behind her. So there's going to be a frenzy if she can make it and do her thing. But, you know, she's still young and she hasn't finished growing. And like I said, that's going to affect her end product.
Exactly. Yeah. And I mean, as healthy as women's American tennis is, definitely cannot say the same for the, you know, for the men's side, because the women's side, they're just crushing it right now. They have so many promising stars. Anisimova, as I mentioned, Gauff, so many young players that are coming through. But they need to really get it together, I think, on the men's, because we would love to see a guy like Tiafoe really challenge one of these top guys at a major, or Fritz, who won his first event. We got to give him a shout out right before Wimbledon, or, you know, like you said, Opelka. And then there's all these kids that are coming up, but, you know, it's tough. It's tough around the men's side, I guess. I don't know. Anyways, with that said, Parson and I will look forward now to a little bit of rest. We will regroup, come back for the Rogers Cup in Montreal and Toronto, and then get ready for Cincy, and then the culminating Grand Slam of the season, and the hardcourt, North American hardcourt season, which is the U.S. Open, which I'm happy to be down at again covering later next month. And other than that, thank you very much to Parsa for joining us this week.
Thank you.
Thanks, everybody out there, for listening. Make sure to download this podcast on iTunes as well as Android. Make sure to follow all of our coverage and live streaming and all the stuff that we have on Tennis Connected throughout the next couple weeks. You can follow Parsa at ParsaSammy on Instagram as well as Twitter. And other than that, thanks again for listening as always. Hope you enjoy our new found audio that we're trying to continue to plug away at. And